Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
Good morning. I'm thankful for the opportunity to share our experiences in Arizona with you. And let me just start there by saying thank you to all of you. The support that we received for our trip was overwhelming, and I don't get overwhelmed by much. But whether it was money or gift cards or notes of encouragement, prayer, pats on the back before we left, whatever it was, there was just so much support for our time out there, and it was needed, as you'll see in the slides, and we felt it while we were out there. And so a deep thank you to everybody for that. This was our first night in Arizona, so we stayed a night in Memphis, we stayed a night in Oklahoma City, we stayed a night in Albuquerque, and then we finally drive into Tempe and get settled and, try to unload the car. And then Josh had set up sort of a meet and greet out at a park, Gene Autry Park it was, in Mesa. And so we turned around and went 30 minutes back the other direction to get to the park. And you can see here, hopefully, the picture where you can see sort of the pavilion. There's maybe 15 people there, and I don't know that maybe one person wore a mask that first night. And that would change during our time out there, as Arizona ended up on a mask mandate during our time out there. But we got together, we met people, we had ice cream. You can see also we had a little volleyball game that went on. I may or may not have participated and not done very well, but that was our sort of introduction to Arizona. And it was about 95 degrees at midnight that first night. So that was sort of our introduction to the heat. Also, shortly after, within the first week that we were there, we got word that a lady named Carrie Watchman was going to be baptized. She had been studying with Evan and Josh before we ever went out there. And so the pool that we're in there, that's at Josh's house, we went out just to watch. That was the intention whenever we went out there. And then as we're getting ready and they're taking her confession, Josh looks at Evan and says, are you doing the baptism? And Evan looks at Josh and says, well, I thought you were doing the baptism. And then they both turn and look at me. And I thought, oh, man, I think they're going to ask me to do this. And they sort of whisper to each other for a second. And then they say, hey, brother, will you baptize her? And I was like, yeah, sure. I've never done that before, but that's one of the reasons why we're out here, right? And they were actually surprised that I had never baptized anybody before. That's a whole nother story. But we got down in the pool, and I baptized Carrie. And that's Carrie and her husband, Sullivan, standing there in the other photo with Kelly and I. So I think, we got there on a Wednesday, and I think this was like the next Tuesday-ish. Something like that. So things started moving pretty quickly after that. Up to that point, we really didn't know what was going to happen. All the plans that we had, prior to leaving and conversations I had with Josh and Jonathan and setting everything up, every bit of that got canceled. So we left here having literally no clue what was going to happen whenever we got to Arizona. All we could do was trust that God was going to provide work for us to do. And the first few days, it was pretty slow, okay? We just sort of were there, getting used to everything, wondering, did we just come out here to worship with them for 5 weeks and then turn around and come back? Is that what's going to happen? But after this moment, this sort of kicked off what would become a very busy next 4 weeks. So, little background before we go on to this. So, if you've never been out to Kayenta or you've never been out to the reservation, The Navajo Reservation is bigger than the state of West Virginia. That's the way it was described to me. It's just a massive area of mostly nothingness. I mean, there's not anything there. You can drive for 2 hours and not see a structure, okay? It's not like anything that we experience around here. And so what ends up happening, especially during this time of COVID, you know, in Kayenta, for example, which we'll show pictures of Kayenta coming up. But if you live in Kayenta, there's one store, Bash's. That's the store. That's where you get groceries. That's where you get cleaning supplies. That's where you get everything. And so right now, supplies are limited, right? You can only buy one of this, one of that. And so you go in the store, and by 10 a.m., they're out of everything. There's nothing left. Well, here, if that happened, you could simply just drive 10 minutes down the road and go to another store. And if that one sold out, you could go another 10 minutes and get to another store. Well, it's not like that there. If Bash's in Kayenta is sold out, it's 75 miles to Tuba City. That's the next store. Okay, and Tuba City is smaller than Kayenta, so the odds that Tuba City has anything is even less than Kayenta, and so then you got to go another 70 miles to Flagstaff. And even though Flagstaff is bigger, everybody's going to Flagstaff. There's already the Flagstaff residents, but then you have everybody from Tuba City and everybody from Kayenta and anybody in between all sort of converging on Flagstaff. So then they sell out of everything. And the next stop is 2 hours south in Phoenix. That's the next stop. So, you know, if you run out of something in Kayenta, you may have to drive 5.5 hours to Phoenix just to find, you know, bleach or Pine Sol or toilet paper or food or whatever it is, right? And so that became very apparent as we made this first drop-off, just how important what we ended up doing was. Because on the front end, it didn't seem like maybe it was as big a deal as it ended up being. But you can see this is the first run that we made here. We set up, or Josh set up, a meeting in Flagstaff for the preacher at Kayenta. His name's Dan. I believe he came down with a trailer, and then there was two people from a town called Pinyon that came down and met us just in a pickup truck, and it started small. I mean, you can see there with Kelly and Olivia and Lola, just a tiny bit of supplies on a table. And what, again, what made it difficult, a normal shopping trip, you could probably get all this stuff in a day, right? But everything's limited. You could only get one hand sanitizer. You could only get one pack of masks. You could only get one thing of bleach or one thing of disinfecting wipes, which the whole time we were in Arizona, we found disinfecting wipes one time, one day, and it was just one pack of them, you know? And so getting these supplies was a lot more difficult than we realized it was going to be, and it was 6, 7, 8 hours every day that we were having to basically drive around, you know, Arizona and shop and try to find stuff. Go to Sam's, go to Fry's, go to Walgreens, all these Walmart, all these different things. And it ended up being a much bigger task than maybe just a normal shopping trip might look like. So we load up. That's about Saturday through Thursday. We had to shop. This first run to Flagstaff was on a Friday. That's Josh and I in the back of his trailer. He had a 14-foot trailer that you'll see in the next slides that we filled up top to bottom, you know, front to back with supplies. Then the other picture there, I believe was a lady named Carol. It's not going backwards. But there was a lady named Carol that was there. Larry and Carol, if you've ever met there at Salt River, you've probably met Larry and Carol, sweet couple, and man, they're there every time. If anybody's going to be there to meet you, that's Carol in the picture there standing next to Kelly where you can see potatoes and canned goods and things like that. Larry and Carol were always there. They would be the first ones there. If we were meeting at 7 a.m., they were there at 6:30, and you had to unlock the doors for them. and they were as good a workers as anybody that we've ever been around, and it was thankful to meet them and get to spend time with them. So we load up the trailers, or just the one trailer on this first run to head to Flagstaff. Again, that's sort of the meeting point. That's sort of the middle point. It was about 2 hours from us. Plus, it was about 2 hours from Kayenta. I'm not sure exactly how close Pinyon was to it, but you see the trailer there. All these white bags that you can see in the front on this picture to your right, that's flour. So fry bread is a traditional Navajo food. They bake a lot of bread. And so we needed a lot of flour. And these are all 20-pound bags of flour. And not only flour, but it had to be a specific type of flour. It had to be bluebird flour. That's what they wanted. They didn't want just regular flour. So you could see where that could present a problem. You couldn't just get flour. It had to be that one type of flour. And not every store had those bags of flour. But we did what we could. And I want to say there's maybe a 1,000 pounds just of flour on this first run. And it ended up being, you know, rough estimate, probably close to 2 tons of bottled water, cleaning supplies, canned goods, the flour, whatever masks, anything that we could possibly think of, we threw on that first trailer because we didn't really know what they needed. This process sort of got streamlined as we got more and more used to it. But this first run, we just kind of threw stuff together. Okay, and food, again, anything that we could think. Spam was a big deal. They eat a lot of spam on the reservation, so trying to find enough spam for everybody became an issue as we made these runs also. So we get to Flagstaff. The picture to your left there of Olivia and Lola, that's the truck that Pinyon came down in, that we just loaded up their truck bed with a few supplies. And then that's a picture of everybody on the other side. The man in the blue shirt and then the lady in the white shirt, those were the couple that met us from Pinyon. Everybody else was from Kayenta. And you can see that's the trailer there behind us. And I think that's the one, this was after we had loaded everything up. Or actually, this may be before we loaded everything up. And so we got that picture with Dan and his family. There you can see the back of the truck. And then there's our unloaded trailer. And then we had a nice prayer afterwards. And it was this moment that it sort of started to hit us about just how big a deal this stuff was. Because we have giveaway day around here. You know, we give food to people all the time. We give grocery sacks. We do all these things. But the sort of young woman, you see the really tall guy there. That's Dan. A few people to his left, there's a teenage girl there. And as we're praying for this and as we've unloaded all these things, she's in tears. I mean, she's so overwhelmed by the things that we had brought, that it brought her to tears. And you know, again, something that we thought it was just, I mean, we knew it was a good thing we were doing, obviously, and we're providing all this stuff. But, you know, you'll see a little later with another lady that we helped out, what we came to realize was a lot of times this was more food than these people had ever seen, you know, or had seen in a very long time. And you know, again, you guys are all a part of this. The support that you gave us allowed us to go out and get as much stuff as we did. And we have not been to the reservation at this point. Again, this is just in Flagstaff. But once we actually got to Mini Farms in Kayenta to see the living conditions, you know, I think about what you said this morning, Brian, about, you know, there's Christians out there that don't have what we have. You don't have to go across the world to see that. You can go to Arizona and see plenty of Christians that really don't have much. And you know, I think about going to India, and there's, you know, the people in Chennai, India are much better off than the people on the reservation, even though we might think of that as being across the world and someplace, you know, that might be, you know, run down. It's right in our own backyard, so to speak, too. So that was that first Flagstaff run. Again, we helped Pinyon. That was the second time Pinyon had been helped. Josh, the week before we got there, had just sort of filled up his own truck and taken them some stuff. And so that would be the last time we would see them. We would not see Pinyon again while we were out there. The next week, again, things start to sort of snowball. Now we've sort of, we got this process down. We know where to go buy things. Josh has just sort of turned this over to Kelly and I at this point. Well, we asked a lot of questions that first week, and Josh would be very honest. You know, we would say, hey, do you think we should, you know, get this or get that? And he would say, I don't know. You know, sure. Yeah, go. That sounds great. Go get that. And so we learned that, you know, we probably just need to do what he said. Just go get it. If we think it's a good idea, just go get it, and he'll probably be fine with it. And so that's what we started doing. You see, there's Carol again in the orange shirt. I'm telling you, her and Larry were there all the time. You see a lot more kids in this other picture. So Concord Road, their youth group came down while we were there. They had planned to go to Res Camp, which was one of the things we were going to do, and they go to Res Camp every year. And this would have been the week that we would have been at Res Camp, and they already had flights, and they already had planned to come. And so Josh thought they were going to cancel, but they said, hey, can we just come anyway and like maybe do a VBS there or something? And he said, yeah, sure, come on. So we ended up having a lot of extra help that next week, which, again, I think God's hands are all over this. We needed all the extra help that week because we ended up loading two trailers worth of stuff that week. So sort of the close-up shot to your right, that's Josh's trailer, that's Evan's trailer. So Evan Totticini, he brought a trailer that time, plus Josh had a trailer, and they were both full. Okay, so we had almost twice as much stuff as we did the first time on this second run. We also learned... So on the Navajo reservation, they would have lockdowns on the weekend. They could not leave the house from 8 p.m. Friday until 7 a.m. Monday morning. Nobody in, nobody out. Well, that first run when we met them in Flagstaff was on a Friday. So by the time we met them unloaded, they got the stuff back to Kayenta, they didn't have any time to pass it out. So it sat until Monday morning. So you had some people probably go the whole weekend without food, you know, without any way to clean. And so, you know, Josh and I talked and we decided that the next run we would make on a Thursday. Gave us one less day, but we figured we could drop off and that would give them all day Friday to be able to distribute however they were going to do that. And so that way people could have food and the stuff that they needed over the weekend. So we load up two trailers. Again, I didn't have to hardly touch a box this time because all those kids were there from Concord Road. And, you know, when you got 20 kids there, you might as well put them to work, right? And so they loaded up all the material, and we got it loaded in half the time. I mean, even though it was double the trailers. So that worked out really, really well to have them there. I tried to get Josh to find random kids to bring in the next week. That we could have load the trailers up for us after Concord Road left, but we weren't able to get that done. So our first, even though it's labeled Kayenta Run, our first trip was actually to Many Farms, Arizona, a tiny community. You know, the structures you can see in the background of that picture with the sign, that's about it. That's about all that was there. There's basically two families of Christians there. It's about 10, 15 people, and that's it. And that's who we dropped off a lot of this stuff to. The building where we're all standing there, that is the church building. It's basically two trailers put together. It's not a large space, and that's who we were dropping off to. And we filled it up. We filled up. That's two different pictures. That's not like the same corner taken two different times. We filled up their stuff with cleaning supplies, again, canned foods, big deal. And they were, again, so thankful, you know, and just they couldn't believe the amount of stuff that we were willing to bring to them. I don't know if they didn't know how much we were going to bring or there wasn't a conversation, but we gave them so much that we never heard from any farms again either. I think we had given them, you know, maybe a month's worth of supplies for that 10 to 15 people, and that was not even all of it. That's, you know, about three-fourths of what we took on that trip right there. And then we had to get from Mini Farms to Kayenta. So just to sort of describe it, Mini Farms was a little over 4 hours northeast from Mesa. So we go 4 hours there. We spend an hour or so unloading. And then we've got to go about an hour and a half northwest of there to get to Kayenta. Well, again, little things we don't think about here. So Arizona does not observe daylight savings time. They're always on the same time, but the reservation does. So while we think we have plenty of time to get to Kayenta, it hits us, wait, you know, as we're looking at our watches, we got to be there because they start curfew at 8 p.m. And if we don't get there by 8 p.m., they may not let us in. And it's like, you know, 6:30 whenever we're looking at that. So we jump in the car, we head from Mini Farms to Kayenta, and again, there's nothing between there. We somehow, Josh maneuvers his trailer through a Wendy's, and we get food, and we get to Josh's trailer where he used to live on the reservation right at 8 p.m. We, as we're pulling in his driveway, a sheriff's car is pulling out of the neighborhood and goes and parks on the main road there, looking for people to make sure nobody's out and about after 8 p.m. You can see we made signs, too, to put on the trailers this time. That was another adjustment from the first run that we made. So it says Church of Christ on there. And also says Navajo Nation COVID Relief, if you can't see that. And there's Lola standing with the signs. And that was a good touch. We got lots of honks and waves as we went down the road as people would see the signs. So that was Thursday as we dropped off at Mini Farms. So this is early Friday morning. We left about 8 a.m. Friday morning there in Kayenta to pick up the man that's me and Josh over there. The other man with us is a man named Kelly, who is sort of the backbone I get from talking to Josh about it of the church in Kayenta. He's been there a long time, super nice guy, really genuine, joyful guy to be around. So he helped us unload the rest of what we had on the trailer. You see the sign there, Kayenta Church of Christ. Again, it was the first time I'd been there. I'm sure plenty of you have been there, maybe even helped build it. It's still in great shape, really nice building. So that was cool to get to go there. After we left there, Josh sort of took us up to Monument Valley, and we went into Utah a little bit and then made the long stretch home. We did meet another guy there. I can't remember his name now, but the traditional dwelling place of the Navajo is called a hogan, and it's basically just an octagon-shaped single room, no running water, no electricity. That was the case with a lot of this housing in Kayenta, and he had been kind of down on his luck and had recently lost his father, so we went and visited him for a little while, said a prayer for him, and then headed back. The next week, the plan was to go to a place called Fort Defiance, where a man named Terry Lawrence preaches, but he came down himself on a Tuesday, sort of surprised us. And instead of us delivering to him, he brought his truck down, and we loaded him up there. So what it meant was we really didn't have anywhere to go that next week. But we were still looking to serve, still looking to find somebody to help. And then turns out this lady named Gwen, who somehow knew Josh, I don't know if they went to school together or what the relationship was there, but somehow there was a roundabout relationship. And what you see here is a screenshot of, I think, a Facebook post she made. You can see the bags and the flour and stuff that we gave Gwen. Gwen came to us looking for help. We helped Gwen. Gwen's mother was not doing well, and that's who this ended up going to. And as you can see, I'll sort of read it a little bit, but she's thanking us for the food. She says, I can't help but cry. She said she can cook a hot meal tonight without worrying about her next one. And then in the small captions there next to the photo, you have the message her mother sent to her that says, "Sweetie, this is a lot of food. I haven't seen this much food in 10 years. Thank you so much for all this food." And then the next one under that says, "I'm pretty emotional now." And that's what we were doing there, right? That's one lady, sorry, that's one lady and her family. But when you think about that's more food than she had seen in 10 years. I mean, again, we see that much food weekly, you know. She'd not seen that much food in 10 years. And these people were not Christians, so this was another good reason to do this. This is their introduction to the church, right? So now they see the church as people that are willing to help when help is needed, okay? And that was a great way to hopefully reach her. We had a faith and family night, sort of. We showed a movie. You can kind of see it on there. There's Josh and Evan sitting off to the side. And again, there's Carol showing up in the picture. This was another thing that we don't think is a very big deal. We have stuff like this all the time here, okay? We have in the summer times, you know, we would have the movies out here on the lawn on Friday nights. And, you know, we had singing this morning with the kids. And, you know, the men's class got together last week and met and had a meal. And JD gave a great devotional and all these sorts of things. And none of that was organized, you know, by the elders or by the church necessarily. That's just individual Christians saying, "Hey, let's get together and meet." So that's basically all we did here. We ordered pizza. You know, I think I got like 15 Little Caesars pizza. So thank you, whoever gave us the Little Caesars gift card. That's what that went to. And so we put this together and have a meal, and everything's great. And I talked to Josh for a long time this night, probably close to 2 hours. And he said that was maybe the third time in his 7 years that anybody had organized anything that wasn't him organizing it. He said it just doesn't happen. Nobody does things like that, you know. And again, I didn't realize it was that big a deal when we did it. It was just, hey, let's do this. This ought to be fun. But it was a really big deal to them. And that's one of the things that is the struggle there, is getting people to step up and do things. And hopefully one of the things that the Christians there saw was that they can do those things. It doesn't have to be Josh, it doesn't have to be Evan, that anybody can step up and do these sorts of things and organize that. So that was a good time to spend with everybody. The kids really loved it. They got to hang out a lot that night. So then that brings us to the last run. We were worried there wasn't going to be anything else for us to do. We had given so much already that those places weren't asking for more supplies. Well, there's a lady named Tia. Reggie and Tia are two members there. Tia is half Apache, I believe, was the connection. And so she knew people on the Apache reservation. And you can see here, at the time, Apache had passed Navajo as the worst per capita COVID cases in the country, I believe. And for the last at least 2 weeks, but I think it had been longer than that, you see the sign, it says, "No visitors." They had not allowed any non-natives on the reservation in at least 2 weeks, and nobody had left in 2 weeks. They had locked it down that much. The other sign says, you know, "Stay at home, be safe." Well, they allowed us on. Now, to my knowledge, we were the first non-natives to enter White Mountain Apache, and like I said, in at least 2 weeks. They got us to be considered essential, so we were able to go on. And they were broadcasting it on the radio. I mean, like minute-by-minute updates. Like, they're 2 hours away, they're 1 hour away, they're 10 minutes away. And so a couple of ladies met us in that parking lot beside that yellow sign. Then we followed them into White Mountain Apache territory. Also, no Churches of Christ on White Mountain Apache. So this was another great way to reach out where there is no church, and that's a great opportunity there in Arizona that hopefully Josh will be able to take advantage of. Because there's no churches, that's why, again, we've streamlined it. We went to the bags this time, the grocery sacks. If you followed on Facebook, that's where I put about their giveaway day. I told them about that, and we put it all up front, again, as a way for them to see that what they were doing mattered. You know, the money, the time, the effort that they were putting in, there was a visible, tangible thing that they could see that they, the things they do matter, okay? And so we thought that was important for them to see. Stapled to each bag was a business card of Josh and Evans and a correspondence course. So we had 55 bags of food. So we stapled, we had more food than cleaning supplies, again, because of all those problems. So stapled to all 55 bags were those two things, plus we brought some extra. And we thought, at the very least, we're going to give 55 families an opportunity to take a Bible course. I don't know if anybody has responded to that yet, but hopefully they have. When we were there, as we introduced ourselves, they asked us where we were from, and you know, we said Salt River Church of Christ. They assumed that we were Mormon, the Church of Christ. They thought that was, you know, Church of Christ of Latter-day Saints. There's the big Mormon population out there, so Josh was sort of taking a video of a guy that's the tribal council leader there in Arizona. And in his video, he said, like, we want to thank the LDS church for coming and doing this. Josh's like, wait, no, you know, cut. We got to redo that again. It's not LDS church. But we you know, lined up all the bags there. And you can see there's a road in the background of that picture on your right. There would be a line. That's where they were pulling in. This was a big empty parking lot, and we sort of spaced everything out, and we just had them come through in their cars, and we would pick up bags and just hand it through the window. You know, move on to the next car, pick up more bags, hand it to the window. We had, you could see there's the line of cars coming through there. You know, one would be handing out cleaning supplies, one would be handing out food, so forth and so on. There's the people that helped with that. Then there's Josh and the tribal council member that he was talking to. And then there's my girls and a couple of Josh's kids on there also. So there was a lot went through my head as we were out there. And one of the common things that came up was this idea that we had given up our summer to go and serve. Okay, Kelly and I both being teachers, you know, normally in the summertime, we've got all the time in the world to just sort of do whatever. And the idea that we would give that up to serve, you know, resonated with a lot of people. We heard it here before we left, we heard it while we were out there. But the more I thought about that, I thought, you know, did we really give anything up? And to think about that, I really need to think about, what did Jesus give up for me? If you want to look at Philippians 2, 5 through 7, quickly I'll give you an opportunity to turn there if you want to. Philippians 2, 5 through 7 says, "Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men." That phrase that Jesus emptied himself for us, you could do a whole big long study and probably a whole sermon over just that phrase, but that came up when we were in Kayenta, that whole idea of Jesus emptying himself, and it's something that I'd not really given a lot of thought before, quite honestly, but in talking to Josh, this verse became more and more and more important for me. So what did Jesus give up? Well, you know, Jesus was already in heaven. Jesus gave up heaven to come to earth. We look at Colossians 1, 16 through 17, "For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Jesus was in heaven with God, being worshiped, and gave that up so that I could have hope to go there one day. Ever thought about it? Like, he already had the goal, right? The goal is heaven. He's there. He gives that up so that you and I can have hope to join him there one day. Jesus also, while he's in heaven, gives up his eternal glory when he comes to earth. We look at John 17, verses 4 and 5. I glorified you on, this is Jesus saying a prayer in John 17, I glorified you on the earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do. Now, Father, glorify me together with yourself, with the glory I had with you before the world was. We get a view, a glimpse of Jesus' glory as he's being transfigured on the mountaintop, and he shone like the sun and was as bright white, and Jesus had this glory in heaven, but gave that up to come to earth so that one day I can be glorified. He had heaven, gave it up so that one day I could reach heaven. He had glory, gave it up so that one day I could be glorified. And ultimately, Jesus gave up his life. Sacrificed his life for us. 1 Peter 1:18 and 19, knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life inherited from your forefathers, but with precious blood as of a lamb unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. Jesus sacrificed his life so that I could gain mine. He gave up heaven so I could have heaven. He gave up glory so that one day I could be glorified with him, and ultimately gave up his life so that you and I could have hope of eternal life. We found out while giving up our summer, we gained so much more in return from Christ. It might have looked like we were giving things up, but what we got in return was so much greater. And the good news is that's available to everybody here. Everybody here has the equal opportunity to give something up for Christ and to gain so much more. If you haven't become a child of God, you have that opportunity this morning. You can give up the world. Maybe that's what you need to give up. You need to give up your current way of life so that you can have this hope of a better one. You'll have that opportunity in just a second. Maybe you've already taken that step. I've already given up my life. I've been baptized into Christ, but I've fallen away. I've fallen into sin. You'll have an opportunity to come forward and confess that and repent. Maybe it's not even that. Maybe you've just got this weight on you, right? Times are hard right now, COVID and all these things, and maybe you're just stressed out and weighed down and worrying. You can give all those things to Christ. If anything that you need, won't you come now as we stand and sing?